Hello, Belinda.
Hi, Omar.
Happy 2023.
It's incredible. We're in a new year.
It's exciting to start a new year and just sort of that feeling of like, okay, we're turning a new leaf. What do we have in store for us? And today we have a fun conversation with, as always, beautiful stories from our artist, Arlene Kim Suda. And then Simon Sinek himself joins us for the podcast. What are some of the things that sort of resonated with you in the conversation? Because we didn't give him an easy topic.
Yes, it is our most popular podcast episode from season one. So it's very appropriate. We're starting the new year kind of revisiting this theme of forgiveness and really featuring some longer clips of our conversations with Simon, just around unpacking forgiveness as a practice in his own life and his own personal and professional work. And also a really captivating conversation, Omar, between you and Simon, just around what he thinks about heartfulness being the new mindfulness and some really interesting life advice that he gives to us to invite just a bit of chaos and messiness to go for a walk without a map. So this is very particularly relevant for the new year as we're all thinking about how do we want to show up this year and how do we want to feel? What do we want to experience?
His advice is so good, as always, when we get to that part of the conversation. So this theme of forgiveness, what is it being represented by in the Gratitude Blooming card deck, and what is the prompt for it?
Is the flower, the anemone, and the prompt is, forgiveness can be one of the greatest gifts we give or receive. How can you express gratitude for being forgiven or give forgiveness to one in need?
Well, happy new year, Belinda and Omar and everybody out there. And I'm excited to start the new year with a new story about this card, which was a little unexpected that this came up, but why don't I go ahead and tell the story? So I recently had an experience with a small plant that made me feel the way I felt when I first drew this anemone flower, the first of the 100-day drawing adventure that eventually led to these Gratitude Blooming cards. I noticed this small plant struggling. It was planted in a yard with another of its kind several yards away. But unlike the other tree that was tall and growing strong, this one seemed stunted. For some reason, it was not growing. When I encountered it, it had a circular wire trellis around it to provide some support. When I sat next to it, I noticed it swaying in the wind. It was full of energy and very much alive. When I looked closer, I noticed a few of its leaves had developed grooves on their edges so that when the wind blew, the groove of the leaf would get stuck in the wire trellis, which was just making the groove deeper. To a human like me, it looked painful. It's like the plant was trying so hard just to live and survive, but the pattern it was repeating in the wind only caused its leaves to become more and more scarred and stuck. Sometimes I think forgiveness is a bit like letting go of that pattern we rely on or are so accustomed to that in the picture is really causing us harm. It's hard to get to that place where we can see that pattern and make an intentional choice to change because it takes an emptying out of so much of ourselves to get there. It requires a bit of letting go of our ego, which can be hard since it's in many ways contains our own way of surviving. Forgiveness feels like it can be the small but powerful step towards the change we hope for in our lives. To just take that small step and try swaying in a new direction so you don't make your painful grooves too deep. That's what I told the little plant that day, and that's what I hope for anyone who is ready to welcome some forgiveness into their lives.
Yeah, I think it's Brené Brown's first line in The Gifts of Imperfection. She says, once you see a pattern, you can't unsee it. And so now that you've put that idea of forgiveness is part of a pattern, like, do we forgive or do we not forgive? And do we let go or do we hold on? I was recently on the Big Island, and thanks to Belinda, I was at this peace sanctuary, which was beautiful, bluff 7 acres, looking out over the heritage site of the City of Refuge, where it was also sort of a place of forgiveness, where if no matter what crime you committed, if you made it to this sanctuary, you were forgiven. The challenge was that if you didn't make it to the sanctuary, people would potentially kill you. And so it was very dramatic. And as I was going into this labyrinth and I was thinking about 2023, I was like, what lessons do I want to, or what lessons should I learn from 2022? And as I slowly made my way step by step through the labyrinth, and my nose was runny, and so I was very just sort of discombobulated in some way. So it took me a while to kind of just make my way through this labyrinth. And I got to the center and I was like, what's the lesson? And the words that came to me and really sort of I felt in my body was this message, never give up, never give up. And I had just seen this sign from the Dalai Lama earlier in the peace sanctuary. And so his words came back and he said, no matter what is going on, never give up. Develop the heart. Too much energy in your country is spent developing the mind instead of the heart. Develop the heart. Be compassionate, not just to your friends, but to everyone. Be compassionate. Work for peace in your heart and in the world. Work for peace. And I say it again, never give up. No matter what is going, no matter what is happening, never give up. And so I think sometimes for me, and I took that lesson as I was, okay, 2023, like, let's just keep going, right? Like, how do we persevere, but with compassion, right? Not with just the mind, but with the heart. And I think that's where forgiveness lives, right? It lives in the heart. And how do we sort of let what we need to go so we can keep moving forward? And some of that baggage that we might be carrying, forgiveness is how we put that baggage down.
I love that the word give is in your intention and your consciousness and literally in the word of today's theme.
That's an awesome observation. I hadn't even seen that.
So Omar, you have been collaborating for a while now with Simon Sinek. So I would love for you to share with our listeners, who is Simon and what have you appreciated about working with him?
Yeah. So first and foremost, if you don't know who Simon Sinek is, if you may have heard of Start With Why, right? That's his sort of classic book that he wrote, and the title of the TED Talk that he gave a while ago, and I think is in the top 5 TED Talks ever given. And I think at the time that he gave that TED Talk, Start With Why, it was really focused on organizations who were sort of fighting around the idea of mission versus vision, right? Vision is like the big sort of idea. What really are you trying to sort of accomplish? And mission is, okay, now how do we actually achieve it, right? It's sort of like more of the business plan of vision. And it was, what's more important? And he was trying to break that sort of kind of argument and said, like, let's just start with why. It's not about the big idea or even how to execute on it. It's just like, why are we here? Why are we doing these things? And then we can figure out the what, the who, the how, the when. And that really sort of set him on a path to really almost create a cause around this idea of starting with why. And that's really what he's continued to do in his career. And it's his full passion. I've had the opportunity to have lunch with him a few times. Sometimes you're like, does this person actually just say these words? And how does he actually practice them in his life are two different things. And really the collaboration was born because he experienced one of our gratitude blooming circles. You, Belinda, and I were sort of created a space, 1 hour with his team, and held sort of the space for people to reflect on the gratitude blooming cards. And at the end, he was in tears because he was so moved by the vulnerability and the reflections and the time that, and at the time, I'd only spoken to him for 15 minutes before that sort of space he gave us. And so that was sort of him trusting kind of this experience. And that sort of opportunity to sort of collaborate with him has only grown because it's really built on that trust and openness and vulnerability that he saw in his team created by this practice.
So we're going to share a bit about Simon through this reflection that he had of this word forgiveness and a really kind of painful experience he's had practicing forgiveness. So I hope you enjoy hearing from his perspective.
When we decide on forgiveness, it's often filled with judgment, right? Are they deserving of my forgiveness? They've done something so horrible. They don't deserve my forgiveness, which is the old adage, which is resentment is drinking poison and hoping the other person will die. I think withholding forgiveness is very similar. Like it eats us alive because we replay the events over and over in our head, judging that they are not worthy of forgiveness. And it is, we are only hurting ourselves. And I think forgiveness has mutual benefit. And the power to give forgiveness allows another person to grow, but it also allows us to move forwards. The power to receive forgiveness. I think sometimes it's somebody does forgive us and we don't think we're deserving of forgiveness. And then the same thing, there's a stuckness. And so I think the skill, and I'll call it a skill because I think it takes practice, the skill to give or receive forgiveness, I think is an essential skill to, I think it's a precursor to gratitude. I think it's very hard to experience gratitude if you're incapable of giving or receiving forgiveness. I had someone who took advantage of me in a horrible way and it would eat me up alive. And after quite some time of stress that whenever this person's name would come up, anger is the only thing that would, you know, and I made every effort to have them sort of removed from my life so that I wouldn't have to get angry every time they showed up. And I decided to be the better person and forgive. And I decided to have lunch with this person and express myself and take responsibility for maybe my overreactions and times and express forgiveness. I got up and walked away from lunch. And I've now gone through the process of learning to forgive without him.
Where did that anger live?
When his name came up and the anger showed up, it was consumed my entire chest. It's like an inhale, and where all my traditional tension would sit and maybe in my shoulders, it was consuming. And it filled my brain because then I would have to vent for 5 minutes before any work could get done to get it out of my system before I could listen to anything else. It was an unbelievable distraction. And I'm the first to admit how hard it was to let go, because when something is emotional for us, we hope that it'll be emotional for someone else. And I had to come to terms with the fact that it was only emotional for me.
It's really striking how it comes back to your story of the plant. And its lesson on forgiveness for you, Arlene, just how hard it is to let go and how much suffering is involved with all of that.
A little bit of what's coming up for me when I hear the story, when I heard Omar talking about heartfulness and mindfulness, is I do think forgiveness really comes from, it has to come from the heart. When I think about why, it's like I do think it. We have to let go of our ego. We have to let go of that. And that so much of the ego is in the mind. And so I like what I'm hearing, that it really has to start from the heart. It hadn't really sunk in for me how much forgiveness is a heartful practice.
I love that forgiveness is a heartful practice. And just even how Belinda, you asked him, like, well, where do you feel forgiveness? And him recognizing that it wasn't like the stress in his shoulders or back. It was something that he held in his chest. And I think that this, for me, having recently had some conflict with a business partner, and what he said, Simon, about the overreaction, right? And I think the sort of the reaction, the overreaction, and I just said, sorry for my part in it. And then even just my saying that, how relieved and I felt. No matter what then happened on the other side, I was like, hey, I'm taking responsibility for my part. And that's all I can do at this point is take responsibility for my part. And the other person's going to do what the other person's going to do. And I think that, to me, just even saying sorry is like, now maybe I'll speak from a male perspective. Saying sorry is in some ways an act of forgiveness, because it is about sort of just taking responsibility and letting go of some ego and just being like, hey, this is how I reacted. May not have been right. I'm sorry. And then I think the key is like, how do we not repeat that practice? How do we not be that leaf that you described, Arlene, in the fence that's caught and that groove? And I think part of that then is sorry is letting go. And then you're sort of moving on. And I think that's like, again, that message from the Dalai Lama, never give up. Like, got to move on, right? Like, and sometimes maybe giving up is not giving forgiveness, not saying sorry.
I did appreciate him really expressing his anger because I felt it in his voice. And how often, and I would say from a female perspective, do we repress our anger? Like, I mean, growing up, that was not an emotion. That was very polite. And how much does anger eat in our at us in our bodies, fester when we don't really allow it to be heard? And I really kind of felt that in a very physical way when he talked about where it lived, like not being able to breathe and finally being able to exhale.
I think I exhaled when he said it.
It was very healing in some ways, even though it's uncomfortable to witness someone's anger like that. It's like, oh, wow, okay. Like, we all kind of relaxed a little bit. So unpacking more of this idea of forgiveness, I ask Simon kind of later in the conversation just what I've been noticing every time this card comes up in our circles. And it was really fascinating to get his perspective on it because it was so different from how I have interpreted or seen the conversations on forgiveness. So I'm going to feature this clip, and then Omar, let's unpack that a little bit, because we didn't really get a chance to talk about it in the conversation because there was so much that came up in that hour with Simon. So this is going to be an interesting moment to actually debrief it together, like months later.
So in the hundreds of circles that Omar and I have led, when people pick this card, one of the things that has been really striking is a lot of people look to self-forgiveness. That's been a really common trend with this card. And I'm curious, I mean, you've talked about, and we can all agree here, that human work is messy work. It can be complicated sometimes. And I'm curious for you, was there a moment in your life when you had to practice self-forgiveness? And what was that like? And how were you present for that for yourself?
It's an uncomfortable reality of where our society is going, where the practice of forgiveness, the first thing too many people think of is me. Like, once again, we've taken something that should be pro-social and made it selfish. And I talk constantly about what makes high-performing teams, and people literally will take my work and apply it to an individual. But it's not meant for individuals, it's meant for teams. And we have successfully managed to over-selfishize almost everything in our society today. And I don't think you can ever forgive yourself until you learn how to forgive others. It is not the other way around. If you can look at someone who you have contempt for and you can find forgiveness in your heart, that is the best way to learn how to overcome the things that you have contempt for yourself and forgive yourself, not the other way around. And we're obsessed with ourselves. How can I find a great job? How can I find love? how can I find what I'm looking for? How can I find my passion? As opposed to how can I help somebody else find their passion? How can I help somebody else find love? How can I help somebody else find the job they're looking for? How can I help somebody else learn forgiveness? And I think we've completely forgotten the power of service. And it is a complete rationalization to say, if I can learn all these things myself, then I can help others. But for the fact that you spend your entire life trying to figure out how to do it yourself, because these things are impossible to master and no one's an expert. And so I find it a little bit depressing, to be honest, that the majority of people who you show this card to, their first reaction is learning how to forgive themselves, though that is important. That the instinct is not how to use forgiveness to give to others, but rather how to use forgiveness to give to myself first.
So yeah, that part I really in the moment was processing, like, do I think it's true that we have to practice forgiveness for someone else to really forgive ourselves? And it's interesting because it created a moment of empathy for Simon. Initially, it was a little bit of dissonance because so many of the people that, Omar, we serve are healthcare workers, are people on the front lines of overextending their care for others, that they lose themselves. And so I think without even that context, it was really interesting to realize that, wow, his context is so different from the world's that we live in or work with. And so for a moment, I was like, wow, that's so different from my reality. Because in those circles, the people are overly caring for others and not caring for themselves. And it was really profound when they had that moment to be step back and say, oh my goodness, I need to take care of myself. Like, I don't do that. And then for him to give such a different example, it made me realize, wow, his lived experience, the people that he works with, it's the opposite. So it almost created kind of uncomfortable feelings. And then what I realized was like, wow, we can't ever assume that our reality is everyone's reality. And so both can be true. In one cultural context, people do need to think about forgiveness as a pro-social. It's about other people. It's not about you. And then in another community, it's like you have to flip it the other way around because it's imbalanced in the opposite direction.
I think you just captured an incredible kind of cultural context in such a sort of simple way, because it's easy to sort of listen to that and just be like, yeah, people are already too selfish. And so how do we help people think of others? And you being like, well, wait a second. A lot of people who we are sort of connected to are all pro-social, like everything they're doing. And I think this is, it brings me back to what got me here, is that I came out of that sort of social change environment. And so the Leo Tolstoy line, everyone thinks about changing the world, no one thinks about changing themselves, was like, oh, okay, I've got to do some work on myself, right? And so it was moving from that external sort of world to that internal world and finding that balance. And this is why that line that I, from Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams, that no change matters, no change is possible without interchange, and no change matters without collective change. And I think this is part of what, it's not that we're right, Simon's wrong, or Simon's right and we're wrong. I think part of everything that we're doing in this season, in this conversation, is really about how we rebuild this conversation of the both and, that there is no separation between me and you, right? Like, we are interconnected. And it's only in our minds, in the sort of Western concept, that we've sort of broken that connection, that we've made the separation. And how do we get back? I was just with the Zen master, Norma Wong, in Hawaii. And she said, people are comfortable talking about connection, but very uncomfortable talking about interconnection. And that interconnection really is that interrelational thing, the interrelationship. We can't separate ourselves. And maybe that's what forgiveness is recognizing, is that we're deeply interconnected.
Yeah. I'm so grateful that we get to have these conversations and really stretch. Like, that conversation really stretched me in a powerful way. And I'm grateful for it, even though there was a lot of discomfort that I felt afterwards. So Omar, this part of the conversation with Simon is really around this inquiry that you have been on this like last year. And I think this is going to be like the center of your work this year. That's what my crystal ball is saying. Just this idea of heartfulness. And so much of this is connected to gratitude blooming. All of the themes, all of these virtues are really trying to encourage us to kind of get into our hearts and reconnect with our hearts. So tell us, why this inquiry? Why is it so center to everything you know, so many things you talk about right now?
Well, even if I look at this piece from the Dalai Lama says, develop the heart. He says, too much energy in your country, and I'm assuming he's saying the U.S., is spent developing the mind instead of the heart. Develop the heart, be compassionate. And I think that then all of a sudden, and this is where I think Simon is right, where it's like, how do we actually be compassionate for others, right? Like, and connect to that because compassion is the interrelationship, right? And I think when we feel that empathy and we feel that connection, and then in the cultural context that we often work is, and then how do we also take care of ourselves, right? Like finding that balance between the two. I think that to me, and I think the other sort of piece of it is heartfulness is this embodied practice. Right. And it's the somatic experience. It's this very physical thing. Right. And I think that to me, and I think as Arlene, you said it, it's like, what are the heartful practices? Compassion is a heartful practice. Forgiveness is a heartful practice. These are things that we cannot actually do with our minds. We can't just mind forgive. We have to heart forgive. And I think part of why I'm obsessed with it is just, I just don't feel like I grew up with any of this language and vocabulary. And so it's me having to learn this and learn it, not just because it's nice to know or need to know. It's like, no, I want to be a better parent. I want to be a better husband. I want to be a better leader. And so it's, I can't think my way to those things.
I appreciate you as a man in particular kind of saying those things, because I think we do live in a predominantly masculine culture. You know, people talk about patriarchy. And so we almost have been taught to kind of drop the heart to really prioritize the intelligence of the mind. And you're helping us kind of rebalance that. And so when you asked Simon, what do you think about this idea of the heartfulness being the new mindfulness? It was cool to see his wheels turning and processing it. And so I'm excited to feature this moment in the conversation as he's kind of just like sitting with this question for the first time and digesting it live.
I think heartfulness is a beautiful thing separately. My friend Bob Chapman, when he describes his employees, he says, we don't have a head count, we have a heart count. And when you said heartfulness, that's what I think, which is seeing human beings, and Bob's language, as everybody is someone's precious son or daughter. Everybody. And to me, heartfulness, it, as the words describe, leaving the head, leaving the mind and going to the heart, allowing something to be less than rational and allowing it to be more emotional. Ironically, which is what mindfulness is all about, funnily enough, it's the wrong word. It's quite ironic. And I think the pursuit of every human being should actually be both. It's not one or, it's one and, which is we should all be rational and emotional. We should be mindful and heartful. And just like the analogy I gave some moments ago, which is you work hard until something becomes second nature. You develop your intuition. You learn how to use the filters. That's what integrity is. That's what ethics are. It's not like people know what right and wrong is. They know what's ethical and unethical. And you hear people becoming intellectualized about what they know is unethical behavior because they always use the law as the standard, right? Well, I did nothing illegal. No, you did nothing illegal, but it is unethical. Like in a business context, raising the price of an essential drug 1,000%, not illegal, highly unethical. And I think we can justify sometimes sort of very uncomfortable behavior as not illegal. I think that's the problem with human beings. We're full of mind. We're able to rationalize all kinds of nonsense from little to big. We can justify not being offering forgiveness. Well, why should I? They did it to me. They should be saying sorry to me. Why should I forgive them? I think I agree that we need more heartfulness in addition to mindfulness. You know, as I wax philosophical, perhaps mindful is being present for yourself and perhaps heartful is being present for others. I think we have made mindful, not only has it become a business, different conversation, but I think that we have made mindful selfish, right? I really love doing meditation because it helps me be present. Well, okay. Well, what about the people you interact with on a daily basis? Congratulations on your mindfulness practice. You are not truly present until someone else says you are. That you sit across the table from them and they tell you something good or bad and you hold space for them. And at the end of the conversation, they say, thank you for listening. They say, thank you for being present. They say, thank you for being a friend. Congratulations. I think that's heartful. And I think to your point, you know, I think we need a lot more heartful in addition to mindful. You should be present for yourself, but you should also learn to leverage that practice to be present for others. And if you want to take it back to my work, there's an entire section called self-help, how to be mindful. And there's no section of the bookshop called how to help others, how to be heartful. So I guess if through that very long thought process where I started by saying it has nothing to do with my work, I guess that it has everything to do with my work.
That was awesome. I love that. Again, he does such a great job of balancing the personal versus the sort of social, right? And it took me back to a moment when I was training for a marathon. This was definitely several years ago. And I would go on these long 3-4 hour runs and I would get into this place. I'm like, oh, everything makes sense to me. I'm present. I can feel my heart. I can feel breathing and everything is in rhythm. I'm so present. And then I'd come home and I tried to go on early runs. So that way when I get back, still the kids are getting out of bed. So I'm not sort of disrupting too much because I'd be so tired. I had no more energy. I had no more patience. And so I was like, oh, this is a great personal practice for me, but it's actually not a great practice for me as a dad. Right? Like this is not actually helping me be happier and healthier and more present for them. And so it was this funny realization that you can do all these practices that you feel great. You get on a running high, you go on a retreat and you're like, I feel wonderful away from everybody. But what really matters is how you are when you're with other people. How do you show up then? And so that's when I realized like, okay, I've got to find a different way into this. And that's where gratitude really helped me kind of show up for others and still take care of myself, right? This is what I love about gratitude is that I think it breaks that binary from the head and the heart. It says I can both practice my self-care and care for others. And gratitude is the language that allows us to do that.
And it's embracing the need for all those things. I remember when mindfulness first started, and it was really a response to the extreme stress of modern life. It was like people were having breakdowns and burnout was a thing. And so this was something taken from other traditions to kind of counterbalance Western cultures, like fast-paced, productive kind of energy. And now what I love about this conversation is the work that we're doing is that's not enough. That we need to now create the other bridge to thinking about our interconnectedness and unpacking, like, what does that actually mean? So what are the steps? What are the practices that we can try to have that presence for ourselves trickle down to our relationships?
I love that he talked about mindfulness has just become such a business now. And as we know, that business has not translated to the world of gratitude. It, like, gratitude is still this sort of very emergent sort of experience and how we're sort of talking about it. But it does make me think about, like, how do we also not make it a business, right? Like, what is that sort of fine sort of balance between sharing and lifting up these practices, but not making them commodities and things that they're just being bought and sold, right? Like, and so this is, I think, part of the challenge. This is, we're talking about a different kind of cultural shift.
So as we enter into this last segment of the conversation that we had with Simon, we asked him about just what advice he would have for people today. And this is going to inspire out of the practice for you all as you're listening. What can I do now at the start of this new year, thinking about new, changing old patterns, starting new practices, new ways of being? Found this really inspirational.
And when you think about that, you talk to young people today and you suggest something like, why didn't you take a gap year? And they think, no, it'll put me behind in my career. I can't take a year off. Or that I have to get the perfect job, because if I don't get the perfect job, I'm going to set my career back. Back from what? Who are you competing against? Like, what are you missing out on? That being young in our careers is the greatest education you can have. And you don't know where it's going to go. And so I think opening ourselves to learning rather than putting ourselves on, quote unquote, the right path, there's something to be said for going for a walk without a map. Because, and I've done this, like whenever I go on vacation, I have the things that I have to see in that city and check off the box. And I'll always spend a day and put away the map and put away the guidebook and put away the website and put away my phone and just go for a walk and discover. And almost always I stumble upon something that I would never ever would have seen or experienced, that becomes the thing that I end up talking about had I stuck to the plan. And so I'm not throwing out plans. I'm just saying perhaps we need more balance, where we have the plan and equally alongside we have a little bit of chaos. We need vision, but the plan's a little more complicated. And you have to have vision before you have a plan anyway. You can have short-term plans. But a 30-year plan? I mean, I don't even know of a single organization that has a 30-year plan. I don't even know that a single organization that has a 10-year plan. To have a 30-year plan for yourself? Like, good luck with that. Because my God, you're going to be upset. You just be met with constant disappointment. As opposed to if you have a vector and only short-term plans that are helping you get towards, stay on the path, then all you get is joy and surprise. Oh my God, this happened, as opposed to, oh my God, this didn't happen. It's like I live a life with a reverse bucket list. Like, I don't want to stare at a list of the things that I haven't done in my life. I want to stare at a list of the things that I have done. And I want to keep adding to a list. I don't want to keep taking things off a list. Like, what is, so what, I get to net zero and then what, my life is complete? No, I want to make the list and the bucket as full as possible. And I think that's gratitude, having a list that you do of the things you've done. I think it's the reverse of gratitude to have a bucket list.
So as we wind down this first episode of 2023, I invite you to, one, go for a walk without your map. No phone, no idea what is going to happen. Just go with your curiosity. What intrigues you? And see what you discover. Invite a little bit of chaos and messiness, new experiences. And if you want to take it a step further, try this reverse bucket list. Start making a list as you go of the things that you discover, the things that you enjoy, the things that you're savoring in your life, like a gratitude journal or a list of gratitudes.
I love the just balance between having that vision, right? Like that why, and just allowing things to be a little bit more unstructured in the present moment and being able to hold both of that and then just to experience it. We just got back from traveling in Hawaii, and it was one of those things where things are always about a matter of perspective. And so we were supposed to return. We were actually supposed to fly from Honolulu to the Big Island. And like a lot of the country, we got caught in the Southwest cancellation of 2,500 flights or whatever it was. And so we were at the airport. We had gotten up early. Everybody was tired. And then we're like, you can't go. It's like, it's a 30-minute flight. And you're telling us we can't get there today at all on any airline, nothing. And so definitely frustrated, upset. And so then they're like, well, we can fly you tomorrow. And we're like, okay, fine. So then we have to, like, fortunately, we had some family still staying there. And I called my cousin. I was like, hey, thanks for dropping us off at the airport. Any chance you could pick us up? And she was like, oh, my God, this is a Christmas miracle, because her daughter was going to get to have an extra day with my daughters. And so all of a sudden, what I took as a very frustrating moment of not being able to travel and go to the next destination was all of a sudden a huge opportunity for my kids and my cousin's daughter to play for a whole nother day. And I think that to me is just, how do we look at things from a different perspective? How do we open to possibility and like, oh, surprise, this didn't go as we expected, but it actually created something else, which was beautiful.
I'm sort of obsessed with maps. So I love that this and Simon's story was about try to explore without a map, because I do think the map is that is in the mind, right? It gives us a mind. I often talk about mind maps. So I really what I'm hearing in this conversation is to take a walk without a map is to blend that mindfulness and the heartfulness. So where does your heart lead when you can step away from the map in your mind? Or maybe you use the map in the mind in a new way to find things from the heart.
Well, it certainly made me feel better when he said most organizations don't have a 30-year plan or even a 10-year, because I feel like running two very heart-centered businesses is a major challenge. Arlene and Omar, you know, we were thinking about that for Gratitude Blooming. And there is this need to have something tangible as you're growing or sustaining a business. And how do you also create room for the unexpected to show up? And sometimes the unexpected is the thing that is the thing you couldn't plan for, but it's the biggest gift that you could ever receive. I mean, I'm looking at this last holiday season, we had an order of 600 card decks from a beautiful foundation that had just gone to a 10-minute talk that Omar, you did for the Collective Acceleration community. And now Gratitude Blooming is living across multiple continents through this organization, and their entire staff and their constituents now have a language to use around interconnection. And there's no way we could have planned for that. And so that's something I'd like to embrace more of, is just these opportunities for possibility that doesn't come with a plan. So we hope that you have an amazing first week of this new year, walking around without a map, adding things to your gratefulness list. And we look forward to having this continued journey with you this year.
Cheers.
Cheers.